And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great hour for you this week. I'm going to be diving in, obviously, to the latest news and all of that and the breaches of the week, which were just absolutely insane. But our deep dive, I think, is probably on one of the most important topics facing the United States today. And no one is talking about this with just any real alacrity here. And that is our local governments, meaning the governments that affect our day-to-day lives the most, are seriously underfunded when it comes to cybersecurity, data protection, or they're simply not taking it seriously. And we are going to go through the numbers because it is getting worse. And a recent case in Florida is just terrifying. And so with that, we're going to start with the news, but stick around. It's going to be a great hour. And in David versus Goliath news, and honestly, this one kind of warmed my heart. Basically, an old man thinks that AT&T sucks, and so he buys a Wall Street Journal ad to prove it. But I think this actually speaks to a much bigger societal issue that we have. I could probably do a deep dive on this one as well, but I thought this was just great, and I thought it would be a humorous thing for this week. But multiple sources are talking about this. I'm cribbing from Ars Technica and Vice, but it's great. Aaron Epstein, age 90, was so ticked off by his 3 megabit internet plan, and 3 megabit is not enough to stream Netflix at full tilt, for the record. He was so ticked off by this that he took out a Wall Street Journal ad in the February 3rd print edition in order to post an open letter to AT&T CEO John Stankey. Now, he's been an AT&T customer since 1960, though he says his family has been using them originally as Pacific Bell since 1930. This guy goes back. Talk about loyal customer. Now, Epstein paid $1,100 to run the ad for one day in the Manhattan and Dallas editions of the Wall Street Journal. Now, the digital version of the Wall Street Journal, online, you can see it online, it's a print edition that's available online, shows that Epstein's ad ran on page A7 and took up the bottom left quarter. So this was a quarter page ad. Now, he chose Manhattan because he wanted to reach investors who might want to pressure AT&T into upgrading his network. And he also chose Dallas because that's where AT&T is headquartered. And for the record, this is essentially what he wrote in the ad, and I quote, "Dear Mr. Stankey, AT&T prides itself as a leader in electronic communications. Unfortunately for the people who live in North Hollywood, California, 91607, AT&T is now a major disappointment. We need to keep up with current technology and have looked to AT&T to supply us with fast internet service. Yet, although AT&T is advertising speeds up to 100 megabit for other neighborhoods, the fastest now available to us from AT&T is only 3. Your competitors now have speeds over 200 megabits. Why is AT&T, a leading communications company, treating us so shabbily in North Hollywood? Now, Mr. Epstein is still actually on DSL, or digital subscriber line. That's an obsolete service that AT&T killed in terms of sales, but is still supporting in some areas where their fiber lines haven't gotten to yet, basically. So he's on really the old service that they have that they're no longer selling. And therein lies, I think, the digital divide for many people in this country. In the case of Mr. Epstein, he was fortunate enough to have another cable provider that he could also use, which was Charter Communications. But I think his sense of brand loyalty kicks in here. He's been with AT&T for 60 years, which means he started on Pacific Bell, went through the breakup of Ma Bell, and stuck with them as they slowly rebuilt and consolidated over the last couple of decades. Many people, though, don't have the luxury of another provider like he does. Add to that the rising broadband costs and then a pandemic where millions have lost their jobs and had to cut the cord, basically, because they can't afford that rising cost, and we have a serious gap on our hands here. Now, consider this passage from a recent technology review article, and I quote, COVID-19 has widened many inequities, including the, quote, homework gap that threatened to leave lower income students behind as schools moved online, as well as access to healthcare, unemployment benefits, court appearances, and increasingly the COVID-19 vaccine, all of which require or are facilitated by internet connections. Now, this situation has usually been seen as a rural internet issue. So, for example, I live in the state of Illinois. I'm in Chicago, in that area. But I know that I can drive out of the Chicagoland area, and I'm not only going to hit cornfields, I'm also going to hit crappy internet. Mr. Epstein, though, lives in North Hollywood in Los Angeles. And that basically, that passage from Technology Review, that focused on a person from San Francisco, which is a major tech hub that is home to Twitter and other large tech corporations. The problem, I think, is that we haven't treated the internet as an essential utility like we have with regular phone lines still supplied by AT&T or electricity or water or even sewage. At this point in history, in the United States, how could a person even advance their education, career, or life without being connected? Not to mention that while we all have phone numbers on our mobile phone or a landline, the Zooms and the Microsoft Teams and other video conference systems are ruling the day. I spend more time talking to people on video chat than I do anything else, including answering or making phone calls. I spend a ton of my time. So I think this is a problem that we have and a margin that's going to keep growing. And we have this economic digital divide that is going to leave a large swath of the country behind, even when they are in cities like Los Angeles or San Francisco. And I'm sure parts of Chicago here or New York or Atlanta, take your pick. This is a problem. We need to address it. And so that is your digital divide news of the week. And in Facebook news, I'm going to ask the question, would shutting down Facebook groups make the world a better place? Now, I bring this up because I recently read an interesting article on Facebook groups, but I want to premise this with the shutting down of the comments sections on websites that we have seen over the years. And honestly, I could probably do a deep dive on this too, but many news organizations shut down basically the comment sections on their websites due to the just insane amount of anger and vitriol from anonymous users they were seeing. Now, take the case of NPR or National Public Radio. Odds are you are listening to this on an NPR affiliate, because that's who I am affiliated with this show. Now, they killed their comments section in August of 2016. Now, in July of 2016, NPR recorded nearly 33 million unique users and 491,000 comments. But those comments came from just 19,400 commenters out of the 33 million unique visitors. That's 0.06% of users who are commenting, and that is a number that stayed steady through 2016. And as we've seen a deeper political divide in this country, thanks in no small part to disinformation campaigns designed to drive wedges into society, I've literally talked about that probably ad nauseum over the years here, these commenters basically have migrated from the various sites essentially to Facebook groups. And they remain one of the worst offenders for bringing extremists together, as we just witnessed in the 2020 election. And so with this interesting article from Guardian, I bring this up because Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO and founder of Facebook, announced a couple of weeks ago that the platform would no longer algorithmically recommend political groups to users in an attempt to, quote, turn down the temperature on online divisiveness. But experts say such policies are difficult to enforce, much less quantify, and the toxic legacy of groups, and not to mention their algorithmic incentives for promoting other groups, is going to be very difficult to to essentially erase. This is a very huge problem that we have right now, where we've seen this, and I've seen interviews with QAnon members. I've interviewed former QAnon members where they say, oh, well, I got into this because my Facebook group on health and fitness was essentially a gateway into all of these conspiracies that seem to align with this. And then Facebook's algorithm would recommend another half dozen or a dozen groups to me. I would join all of them, and I would go further and further and further down that rabbit hole. This is something that we need to combat. This is a huge problem. And so the question is, do we actually shut these down because it's going to be harder? And I think the answer overall is probably going to be no. I don't think so, because there are plenty of legitimate groups out there on Facebook that discuss all kinds of things, from, like, you know, major media personalities, businesses. These groups help cultivate followings. But it would appear that better policing is needed as well. Like, I did a recent daily video and podcast on actual war crimes happening in Facebook groups. I believe I mentioned that in a news segment here as well, where stolen art was being sold, was being sold. But because these groups are speaking in Arabic, Facebook hasn't been able to police it because they don't have the people. And then there's Parler. You know, they just ousted their CEO because he wanted to police extremist posts and content, and Parler's board wasn't having it. They didn't want to police that. So what do we do about that? You know, I think the CEO was afraid of Parler being sued, something that would definitely happen, you know, if they lost their protections under Section 230, which gives them the publishing rights to be absolved of what their users do. But this is a very serious problem that we have. And so I think it's something we need to address, and it's something we need to discuss. And so that is your Facebook, Facebook group news of the week. And in FCC news, or Federal Communications Commission news, we have a new chairwoman, and she seems to be net neutrality and privacy's best friend. Now, here's what's going on. Obviously, with a new administration comes new leadership for the various agencies that oversee the United States. The FCC is no different, and unlike its last chair, Ajit Pai, somebody I have criticized in the past on this show and other places, the new chair seems to be a friend of net neutrality and will be taking a different approach. Now, this person is Jessica Rosen-Warsell, and she was a commissioner, and now she's the acting FCC, excuse me, she's now been confirmed as the FCC chairman. And so she joined the FCC in 2003, but some of the notable quotes from her, especially regarding the 2017 vote to kill net neutrality under Ajit Pai, and I quote, "I dissent from this rash decision to roll back net neutrality rules. I dissent from the corrupt process that has brought us to this point, and I dissent from the contempt this agency has shown for our citizens in pursuing this path today. This decision puts the Federal Communications Commission on the wrong side of history, the wrong side of the law, and the wrong side of the American people." That's who she is, and I think this is really great news. And she's also said other things as well. So, for example, in 2019, Rosen-Warsell called out the agency's seeming lack of concern about a major loophole in telecom regulation that allowed every mobile service vendor to essentially sell your real-time location data to anybody that was willing to pay for it. And I quote her on that. "The FCC has been totally silent about press reports that for a few $100s, shady middlemen can sell your location data within a few hundred meters based on your wireless phone data. That's unacceptable." So this is great. I am actually very much looking forward to this. And if any past indications of what she has said and written, are basically true, that she's going to continue this privacy, this security side of these kinds of things, this is pro-citizen. And I am a huge, huge fan of where she is taking this. And so I'm hoping that she is going to be an excellent FCC chairwoman. I'm hoping that our privacy will be turned up, that Section 230 will be in place until it is replaced by something that, let's say, is more stringent or better or more flexible, that everybody loves, whatever that is. But I am looking forward to seeing what this FCC chairwoman has to do. And so with that, that is your FCC news of the week.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you, or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions@securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions@securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And the last couple of weeks in data breaches has been absolutely insane. I would like to thank the following people, because I got a lot of help the last couple of weeks in basically collecting all of these breaches, and people sent me a ton of stuff. And so Barrett Peterson, David Walker, Jason Dance, Jacqueline Wolf, Chris Fowlon, Susan Brown, Andrew McLean, and Sander Sleidnerink, thank you so very much for sending me these. And if you have a data breach you know of, please feel free to send it to me. I'm happy to give you a shout out. And with that, let's start with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's federal payroll agency known as the National Finance Center. The FBI discovered that the NFC was compromised by exploiting the SolarWinds Orion software flaw. You should know about that if you are a regular follower or listener of this radio show. And this is according to Reuters. Now, the software vulnerability used to break into the NFC systems is actually different than the one used by suspected Russian nation-state hackers to compromise the update mechanism of the Orion software to deploy the Sunburst backdoor to SolarWinds customers. Sunburst, if you recall, is the name of the vulnerability that was essentially exploited and spread around basically every major company and every major U.S. government department. Sunburst was named by FireEye. Now, even though the FBI and the USDA declined to provide further comment, the USDA did confirm that it had suffered a data breach. And the USDA did, however, provide a statement that said it notified all customers whose data had been affected. So if you have anything to do with the USDA and their National Finance Center, or NFC, heads up to you. Moving on, let's go to Leon Medical Centers, which has 8 locations in Miami, and also Nocona General Hospital, which has 3 locations in Texas. Attackers published extensive patient information from these 2 hospital chains in an apparent attempt to extort money from them. Now, the files include tens of thousands of scanned diagnostic results and letters to insurers. One folder that was exposed contains background checks on hospital employees as well. An Excel document titled 2018 colonoscopies has 102 full names, dates, and details of procedures, and a field marked yes or no as to whether the patient has a normal colon. So, if you're one of those 102 people, the dark web knows if you have a normal colon or not, thanks to this data breach. Also, patients' personally identifiable information, like names, addresses, birthdays, as well as medical diagnosis, were also out there. So heads up, if you use Leon Medical Centers or Nocona General Hospital, which however you pronounce that, in Texas. Moving on, let's talk about escortreviews.com, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a review site for escorts. An attacker downloaded the site's entire database. Now, apparently the site was running a platform called vBulletin that was older and had known vulnerabilities, and also it was using weak password encryption, so basically the passwords are easily crackable. Everything has been stolen, so if you have a user on escortreviews.com, you're going to want to change your password. Also, I'm going to be on the lookout for extortion schemes, as attackers could attempt to blackmail basically people they've identified. So if they've got your email address, your password, they might be able to find out if you're married or not and secretly engaging escort services. And obviously, if those start to come to light, you will hear it here on the Deep Dive Radio Show. That is bonkers. Moving on, let's actually talk about a firewall maker and security firm known as Storm Shield. They're out of France. They just revealed that a leak of their source code from their network security and network security industrial firewall products happened following a cyber attack that saw attackers gain unauthorized access to a technical portal used by customers and partners to manage their tech support tickets. So in other words, if you're a customer and you have submitted a tech support ticket to Storm Shield, that's what they hit. Now, the incident, understood to have occurred in December of last year, also saw the personal data and technical exchanges associated with a number of customer accounts accessed and viewed and possibly stolen. All of the affected users have already been contacted, and the firm has notified the French authorities, reset all of its passwords, and ideally says it's strengthening its security across its support portal. So that is a huge, huge problem. Heads up if you use Storm Shield. Moving on, let's talk about Charles J. Hilton and Associates, or CJH. And if you are part of the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, you're one of their patients or employees, heads up, because 36,000 of you may have had your personal health information accessed illegally. This was an email compromise at CJH, and CJH does the medical billing for the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center patients. So everything from social security numbers to bank account info to patient info photo insurance info could have been accessed. And we will also see if Charles J. Hilton and Associates, CJH, is basically in the news again as another, let's say, medical center discloses. Oftentimes, they are catering not just to one medical center, but to multiple medical chains. So we'll see. Moving on. Let's talk about 3.2 billion, yes, billion with a B, emails and passwords, because a new compilation of emails and passwords were recently posted in an online hacking forum, and they are containing 3.2 billion unique pairs of clear text emails and passwords that have been gathered from past data leaks and data breaches. This is an aggregation. Now, as reported by Cyber News, this new leak will be referred to as the, quote, compilation of many breaches, or COMB, C-O-M-B, as it contains more than double the amount of unique email and password pairs that the breach compilation from 2017 had, which at the date was the biggest, and that was 1.4 billion credentials. So this is why we always change our password. This is why we enable multi-factor authentication. But also, when we are looking at a three to four year difference, we have more than doubled our exposed credentials that they are able to aggregate out there. That is a huge, huge problem. Moving on, let's talk about the Patriotic Brigade of the Ku Klux Klan. That's right, we are talking about the KKK, because an Israeli hacking group has taken responsibility for exposing the personal details of a number of alleged members of a Ku Klux Klan group after targeting a website linked to them. Now, a Twitter account linked to the anti-fascist group Hayalim and Aleman Hebrew, Hayalim and Aleman, and I'm obviously butchering that, so if you speak Hebrew or you're an Israeli, I apologize for butchering your language, but that is basically Hebrew for anonymous soldiers. They boasted about how the website of the Patriotic Brigade of the KKK has been exposed on January 30th. The website, Klan331.com, which previously contained a number of obviously racist and anti-Semitic hate material, has now been entirely altered. The site, which basically had its URL changed to JewishAntifa.com, reveals the names of several people who are allegedly members of the KKK. And to quote the message on the hack site, "Any Klansman reading this, we know who you are and we're coming for you. We never forgive, never forget, and never stop coming." And so, as you know, every week that you listen to me here, I am doing breaches of the week. I am never a fan of data breaches, doxing, or cyberbullying, but honestly, it's kind of hard to feel bad about this one. I'm not going to lie to you. There you go. Patriotic Brigade of the KKK. Moving on, let's head on over to the Department of Labor for the state of Vermont, because state leaders basically for about a week continued to grapple with the scope of a technical error at the Department of Labor that compromised the identities of thousands of Vermonters. Now, this issue, which was announced about 2 weeks ago, Monday, as you're listening to this, involves about 44,000 1099-G tax forms issued by the state of Vermont Department of Labor that mixed up the personal information of claimants. And they said, and I quote, "We certainly apologize to all those impacted. This shouldn't have happened. We are going to work to make this right." That is the governor, Phil Scott. Now, basically what happened, apparently, is that 1099s got sent to the wrong people. So you might have been one of those 44,000 that had a 1099-G form from the state of Vermont. You might have gotten somebody else's 1099, and there we are. So hopefully they will rectify that, and that won't happen again in the future. Moving on, let's talk about a company called Goodwin Procter. They are actually a global top 50 law firm, so they're obviously pretty big. They fell victim to a data breach after a vendor it uses for large file transfers recently reported that it was hacked, according to an internal memo that was obtained by Bloomberg Law. Now, Goodwin's breach investigation revealed that a quote-unquote small percentage of the firm's clients, and I quote again, may have experienced unauthorized access to or our acquisition of confidential material. So in other words, basically the small percentage may have had an attacker that accessed their confidential material on January 20th. And this is according to the head of the firm. Now, he also said that potentially impacted clients were notified and all of the firm's clients were told about the breach. Internally, quote, only a few Goodwin employees were affected, and they've all been notified as well. So with that, heads up if you are a client of Goodwin Procter. Moving on, let's talk about Blackbaud. Again, if you listen to me, you know that I'm always talking about Blackbaud, as they've been in the news for data breaches since the middle of 2020. And so the latest one that we have here is the New Canaan Country School in Pennsylvania. They are now disclosing that they got hit with the Blackbaud data breach, or they were caught up in that. So heads up, New Canaan Country School, parents, students, faculty, etc. out of Pennsylvania. Moving on, let's talk about Yandex. This is actually considered the Russian Google. It's a Russian search and email provider. And they said about a week ago that they caught one of their employees selling access to user email accounts for personal gain. Now, Yandex, which did not disclose the employee's name, said that this person was one of three administrators with access rights to provide technical support at this level within their infrastructure for Yandex.mail. Now, the Russian company said it's now in the process of notifying the owners of the 4,887 mailboxes that were compromised and to which this employee sold access to third parties. To me, this screams either some kind of mafia thing, or it screams some kind of state-sponsored actor where somebody was getting paid to give access to, let's say, high-profile officials that might have had mailboxes on Yandex. I'm assuming those would be Russian officials, given that Yandex is Russian. Moving on, let's talk about Excellion. Basically, they are a company, and I'm going to give you essentially an update for this because we are now seeing a lot of information come out about this that we simply didn't know that they were part of this. Now, one of the big things that you may have heard of in the news was the Office of the Washington State Auditor, and they had a data breach that they declared of 1.6 million people that were filing for unemployment. Since that got released, a steady trickle of companies, universities, banks, and other various entities have begun to disclose their involvement in this breach coming from this company called Excellion, which provides services to companies, universities, banks, etc. Now, so far, it's just unclear how many of Excellion's clients were affected or what the long-term effects of this may be, but the firm says they serve 3,000 global corporations and government agencies worldwide, and they claimed in January, when I reported on this originally, that less than 50 companies had been affected by this incident, but the number seems to have gone up.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show. As we take a quick break for a public service announcement, we'll be back right after that.